Today, joined by Dan Titus from Yahoo Sports, we're going to talk about player values, some trades, MVPs, the All-Star game, whatever we want to really, because we're the hosts and why not? Basketball is back. It's going to be a fun one. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. Don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Come on, brothers with me. Come on, brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm your host, Adam King. Find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at AdamKing91. We are on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Please go and subscribe and like and thumbs up everything else. We are part of the Old Man Squad at Old Man Squad on Twitter. Dan Titus, we got here. We made it. I'm a bit late. It's all on me this morning. I'm all in Christmas mode, I think. So It's hard to get up when you're not don't have a lot of work to do. But how are things? It's been a little while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, man. You look refreshed. The hair's growing out. You got a new background since the last time I was here. Like I feel like the glow up for King has been great. So glad you're getting the time off. Much needed. I was actually missing basketball yesterday. It was really hard not to watch anything after the NBA Cup for a couple of days. So it's great to have NBA back, and obviously we're going into the holiday season, so the Christmas slate's always fun. A lot of news coming out of the NBA, though, between trade stuff and changes to the All-Star game, and Yahoo's made some updates, so yeah, we got plenty to talk through.
Yeah, and quickly just on the in-season tournament, obviously the Bucks beat the Thunder. You're still going with the Thunder hat, so that's good to see. I was pretty disappointed in the game, actually. I thought it was probably the Thunder's worst game of the year,
It was.
Mm-hmm. Which was really disappointing. I mean, well done to the Bucks. They've obviously turned things around after a really slow start. But what did you think about the game? I sort of turned it off. I didn't even watch the whole game.
Yeah, I think I've been enjoying watching the Bucks figure it out. For as much slander as Doc Rivers gets over the years, like I think him going to AJ Green and Andre Jackson Jr. I think has really been underrated moves in terms of like their lineup and just what they've been able to do defensively. Giannis is playing the best basketball of his career, so I think it was a bit of a process for him and Damian Lillard to kind of figure out how to play together. And I think Dame's figured out. Like I think Dame's looks so smooth and confident in the moments that he's able to just take over a game. I love the assist that he's been generating lately. So on the Bucks side, I think things are trending up for sure. And then on the Thunder side, it was just a bad game. They don't shoot that poorly from three. I saw Kevin O'Connor had an article today about whether the Thunder are good with Jalen Williams being their secondary scorer, or if they should potentially figure out to make some kind of move. I mean, they do have a lot of trade capital, draft capital, obviously some assets there, young assets. So I'd be curious to see if they're actually in the market for making any trades. But like, again, I think that was just a bad game, bad showing by the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I don't know, maybe it's the Darvin Ham magic or the Torian Prince magic, but the Bucks won it out. So yeah, shouts to them. I think that the game overall was probably not what the NBA wanted. There was no one in the stands. There's a lot of three-pointers being missed. A lot of the gripes that we hear every day on every media platform in existence. So, yeah, man, I think it's just another. I think it was a small win in terms of like, were people paying attention to basketball more on a Tuesday than they normally would have? Yeah, at this stage of the season. But I don't know. I think the NBA is just doing too much in a lot of different capacities. But I enjoy the NBA Cup just because I think it's a nice wrinkle to put some added incentive into the regular season that normally wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Do you think that, because I noticed that as well, like obviously it wasn't sold out. There were empty seats, quite noticeable. I know they try to sort of darken the crowd so that you can't see the crowd as much and put the focus on the court. But do you think, is that a scheduling thing? Like, would it be better on a weekend, or is it just because it's sort of a, I don't know, a middle of the season thing that a lot of people either aren't aware of or don't really care about? Like, is there a way to fix that, or is it what it is, basically?
I think that there is some scheduling opportunity gains there. Like, I mean, I think they'd be better served to probably have it on a Saturday or a Friday rather than a random Tuesday. And then also, like, I think the schedule breaks that they gave for certain teams, like the Lakers, the Suns, like they actually got a significant amount of rest. So, like, from a player's perspective, it's like, oh, cool, we can go for $500,000. But those teams that are injured right now, they're taking that extra week and a half off. It's like an essentially another all-star break for them. Mm. They have a chance to recharge and get better. So, like, I think that's a good thing for players. But also, like, I could see, like, a competitive advantage of, like, hey, is this really a good thing for us, being that some of these teams get to rest all this time and Oklahoma City's playing, you know, more games more frequently and so forth. But, yeah, I think that there's always going to be scheduling opportunities here for improvements. I think the format of, like, the four group play games make a lot of sense. I just think they need to space out and figure out how to get the games on more prime time, like, networks and timing wise. Like, I think Tuesday is just not ideal, like, at all for a marquee, what's supposed to be a marquee basketball game.
And you mentioned the NBA at this point, just trying to do too much in general. The All-Star game would come into that discussion. And they obviously announced the change to the format and basically doing what they did with the Rising Stars last year, I believe. Was last year the first year they did that format with the Rising Stars?
Yeah, and then now they're adding in that wrinkle of, like, some of the Rising Stars being playing against the All-Stars to make that.
So not a format that you're a fan of, this new format with the four teams and the sort of not a round robin, but.
But what are we doing? Like, I get it, we have to save the game, but, like, you could also just, I don't know. I think Elam ending was a good addition to it. And then obviously that got out of hand last year with, like, no one playing any defense and everyone jacking up threes. I don't know. I don't know how you restore the competitive element to it, but, like, going to this, you know, four team breakdown is just not going to be closer to the end goal here, which should be people wanting to tune in and watching the best players play. I'll give it a chance, but I just would rather just go back to that traditional, like, all-star game where people have pride to actually be considered honored to play in a game like this. And I don't know, maybe it's a monetary thing. Maybe they need to be incentivized to play in this game for real. But it worked for the NBA Cup, so I don't know. Why don't just do this? Go get a sponsor for the All-Star game and do the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sad considering how much money they're making, but, you know, it's just a sign of the times, man.
Yeah, whether it would be they do – I'm trying to think where they – I know I've seen it somewhere. Anyway, where the money – there is a cash incentive, but that money goes to a charity of their choice or something.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The money is not for them.
Angle to it. Yeah.
Because this isn't
– make it involve – do some stake with the playoff seeding or, you know, make it matter in other ways other than just like, hey, we're just going out here to play a game that none of us really care about.
Yeah, yeah. Because this is a situation – the All-Star game is obviously not going to be like the – in-season cup where you've got players where $500,000 might be more than their salary or a quarter of their yearly salary. These All-Stars, that is not the case.
Their pockets are not hurting, no.
No, no. There are some, obviously, that are earning significantly more than others. But, I'll give it a chance like you. One good aspect of doing it this way is that we will see – the guys are going to see more playing time in terms of court because there's three teams of eight All-Stars rather than two teams of 12. So we're going to see a little bit more of some of those fringe All-Stars, I suppose. I like that concept. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'll watch it. But I was actually going through – so I pulled out an old – video player, VCR player from under my house.
You still have one.
I still have one.
Respect. That's what's
up. And I still have some home movies and things like that from when we were kids, but I had some tapes that had nothing on them, nothing written on them. So I didn't know what was on them. And I put them in just to see. One of them was the 2003 All-Star Saturday Night. And one was 2005, I think. So I'm going to sit down and watch those.
That's going to be fun.
And I just watched the intro and the hype and around the guys that were participating and in the dunk comp and stuff like that. It was the elite players. And now it's Obi Toppin and Jericho Sims and these guys. These guys are, no disrespect to them, obviously, but not the draw card of when back in the early 2000s when Vince Carter was there. And yeah, it's a very different time. It was just interesting.
That slam dunk, I think, might be that was Jason Richardson when he was on the Warriors, I think.
Oh, yeah, could be.
And then, okay, so that one, I think that was, I remember, I was looking it up. I think that was the battle between him and Desmond Mason, which was pretty good. I remember that. That was Jason Richardson brought out some unique dunks there.
Yeah.
3-point shootout, though. Oh man, there's some funny names on here. Pat Garrity, Wesley Person, Antoine Walker. I feel like he didn't have a good showing. I remember him just having a set shot, so it's been taking forever to get through the rack. And then David Wesley, who had his moments, but Peja was the winner of that one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's gonna be cool to watch. Fun. So that's something I'm planning on doing in the holidays. All right, let's get on to some Yahoo stuff. So we'll start. You tweeted out the other day that some players have had new positions allocated to them. And of course, there's going to be feedback from people.
And
questions and that sort of thing. So I guess in terms of the process involved in that, like, are you able to give, because people do have questions, why isn't this guy a point guard? Why isn't this guy a center? What goes into that decision making?
Yeah, it's a combination of factors. Not only just, you know, the eye test, I think situational context matters too. You know, if a player's been injured and someone steps in, how long is he stepping in for, you know, said person? There's also a lot of on-court data between cleaning the glass, basketball reference, PBP stats, NBA.com, lineup stats. So there's a bunch of various vehicles that we use and aggregate to come up with a decision, pretty much on a weighted scale of like, all right, is this the time where we should anoint said person to get another position? And each year we scrub the list. We have a data provider that provides us with the standard position designations for each player. And we can't subtract anytime a player has a positional designation. We can only add to it. So when we have the more sample size we have of these players playing significant minutes at a particular position, or maybe they're playing multiple positions, which I think is more of the trend now. We're more into this positionless game, especially with certain players that can play a multitude of areas. So it's a bit tricky. We're not going to solve them all, but we're going to get there. And, you know, we did have a significant update over the last week or so with a lot of players, you know, Dyson Daniels getting small forward eligibility, as well as Jalen Johnson, Julius Randle at center, Brandon Miller power forward, Josh Hart shooting guard. I mean, the list goes on. You can check out my tweet. It's somewhere out there. But yeah, I think it's an ongoing process, and we do look at it every week. So we get recommendations and feedback from users in Reddit, Twitter, our customer care handle. So we're constantly looking at those data points to make sure that we're addressing it when it's valid. And there's still some discrepancies, right? Like, you know, cleaning the glass can say one thing and basketball reference says a completely other thing. So that's when we have to utilize the other factors to kind of determine, all right, what's real, what's not, what could we continue to look at and monitor a little bit more, and what makes sense for now.
Yeah, and look, it's tough because we know that we're moving towards almost positionless basketball. And so positional allocations or designations is sort of a thing, not a thing of the past, but it is harder to lock that down. And an example that at the beginning of the season, I know we didn't see a lot of it, but Herb Jones was listed at center for the Pelicans on opening night.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really playing center. Zion was. So who is the center? Is it who is listed as the center or who is playing as the center? And who determines that? You could play center on offense, but what does a center look like on offense now? It's not like the center is the guy that's just posting up and you're running the offense through him. And defensively, what does it look like? Because there's so many screens that it's a really, really tough one. And so you sort of mentioned, and I already do this in most of my leagues, is moving away from point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center, and just having guard, forward, center. That gives you a little bit more flexibility. And you said that's something that you're pushing for. I think that would help the situation. And would make those guard, forward players very valuable. Do you think we ever get to a point where there's just player?
Before we talked about this today, I was actually thinking, what if we just made everybody utility and you just build your team how you want to build your team? Because if you're playing in a categories league, I could see a world where someone likes big men and they want to, value the field goal percentage, the rebounds, the blocks, the points.
Yeah.
But you're also had a deficiency in assists and steals and three-pointers and assists. So, I think that there is probably a world where we could just get rid of positions altogether and you just pick your team that you think would be the most successful. Maybe we should try it out because I know you're always you always like to experiment on new systems and new league styles. So I think we should at least try it. I think at least the stepping point to that is getting to guard, forward, and center. It would just simplify things a lot easier, adding a forward spot if someone is worthy of it, adding a center spot if someone's worthy to it. I think that would be much easier to manage. And then also, from a roster management standpoint, sometimes you always have those guys like Darius Garland or Peyton Pritchard that only have one position eligibility. You can only put them in a point guard spot or the guard spot, depending on how your roster, your league settings are. But I think it just broadens it a little bit. So it makes it a little bit easier to fit your guys in and you don't have to worry about this swapping or, he doesn't fit here. It just makes it a little bit more confusing than it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about this for days, but you even something I noticed in the preseason, haven't noticed it as much during the season, but with the Hornets, for example, LaMelo Ball is their point guard. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's going to question that. But the amount of times I saw Brandon Miller handling the ball and LaMelo playing off ball. Mm-hmm. So why is Brandon Miller not a point guard if he's playing as a makeshift point guard at times when LaMelo is on the court? So you could argue the for and against all sorts of things, but we won't.
Scotty Barnes is the number one person that everybody wants to get point guard status. And in a perfect world, if Emmanuel Quickley's playing, he's still going to be initiating the offense, but he's a point guard. Davion Mitchell's been starting games because he's a point guard, but who's running the offense?
RJ Barrett has had 5 double digit assist games.
Dude, he's putting up career numbers in his assists whenever Scotty's off the court. He's been the main facilitator. So do we give RJ Barrett point guard?
It's a tough one. I don't think you'll ever please everyone. No. So it is what it is. All right. So some player trades or trades, but more of a discussion around player value, I guess. So a couple of the most traded players in the last day, but it's probably the last week really, given what I've seen, Joel Embiid and Dennis Schroeder for different reasons. Joel Embiid, obviously, so many questions around his health. And I know this latest injury was obviously just bad luck, really. Had nothing to do with his knees. But honestly, I mean, you're a Sixers fan. You'd be watching them closer than, closer than others as well. to me, Joel Embiid just looks, I'm not going to say he's done, but he looks slow, noticeably slow. And he's going to put up numbers just because he is massive and he's such a good player. But I'm surprised teams aren't taking advantage of his knees and just trying to run him off out of the game or off the floor. I mean, where is your confidence level in terms of Embiid's health, not only this season, but just rest of his career?
It's not particularly high. I think it's more of a stylistic thing that's always been bugging me, is that he thinks he's like James Harden in the sense of like he's the system and everything must run through him. His usage rates are always ridiculously high, you know, north of 30%. But given his injury concerns, you can't have that high of a usage and expect to like remain healthy. Like, yes, the broken nose was a freak accident. He has a lot of freak accidents. He's just an unlucky player. And when you have an unlucky player, do things to put him in situations where he won't be unlucky anymore. Yeah. I don't know. You just paid Paul George a ton of money. Play through him a little bit more. Get him easy looks near the rim. He likes shooting mid-range jump shots. Let him shoot the mid-range jump shots. You don't need to have him banging down low on every possession. He doesn't even do that anyway. And to your point about him being slower, I just think that it's his body's caught up to him. He's not the same guy he was. He looks like he's aging. He's 30 years old, but he has the body probably of like a 45 at this point. So
yeah,
I just think it has to be a stylistic change. They have to run a different offense that's not as reliant on him to do what he's done in the past, because it's just going to wear him out. And I think it's concerning that, you know, coming out of the Olympics and coming into the season, he wasn't in game shape. He was still managing his knee. It sounds like his meniscus injury, even though he had that trim surgery, that's going to be something that's going to be a problem going forward in terms of inflammation. And I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it's, I think personally, I'm not a doctor and I'm not a team physician, but I would expect that if you just played him less minutes more frequently, that would be better than going 34 minutes for four straight games and then taking multiple games off. Like, that seems like that would be a load problem. So I would just scale down his minute, play less through him, let him still get his, because he's a talented basketball player. He can figure out ways to score. He could hang out by the rim and get 9 rebounds by not doing anything. So yeah, I just think it's a philosophy change. And I don't know that, you know, maybe he's not willing to sacrifice. Maybe it's, I don't know what that is, but I would be concerned if I was a Joel Embiid fantasy manager. So if like you have the opportunity, I think now is probably the healthiest we've seen him. If he goes off for another great game, that's a good point to sell high, because I don't know. The Sixers are still in the playoff hunt, you know, as sad as the Eastern Conference is. So I don't know that they're going to necessarily just, hey, let's shut Joel Embiid down. But I think we're still going to see that continual reoccurrences of him just leaving the lineup for a period of time and then coming back. That's a pretty frustrating thing to deal with if you're playing fantasy.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it's hard to know what the mindset of the coaching staff is. Like, are any of them of the opinion that 20 minutes of Joel Embiid 2 or 3 times a week is better than 35 minutes of Joel Embiid once every 2 weeks? And yeah, I guess the concern within the team walls would be, well, we haven't had Joel Embiid for a lot of this first third of the season, and we suck. Like, we don't look good. We don't look competitive. And the center depth, they have Andre Drummond, but let's be honest, Andre Drummond is not a great player. There's a reason he gets shopped around between teams, and he's been on different rosters. And so maybe they do have to go out and look for a more reliable, offensively minded backup. But they also need to factor in that they haven't had Paul George for a lot of that time. So when Paul George has played, they've looked better.
I got to give some blame to Tyrese Maxey too. He hasn't looked great in that 1A role. And, you know, the last couple of games have been nice, but, you know, efficiency-wise, he's nowhere near what he was the last few seasons. So I think it's just a combination of just no one having any chemistry, and we haven't seen that trio on the floor enough. And I think that it also speaks to Daryl Morey's roster construction of like who he's brought in to what you thought would raise the floor is actually just bottomed out because Caleb Martin's played bad. Kelly Oubre's starting to play better, but hasn't been great. Gershon Yabusele and Jared McCain have been their most consistent players this year, which is not a good sign. So, you know, I was always wondering why they were so enamored with Andre Drummond. I mean, I thought that they could have had Goga Batase for, you know, a pretty sizable deal, you know, for what the Magic got him back for. Like, I was like, that just felt like they got older. And, like, that's not what you want to do when you're, you know, relying on a 30-year-old Joel Embiid with no knees and always hurt. And Paul George, 34, also doesn't have the best injury history. I just think that that team is – the problems are deeper than Embiid. And if you're in fantasy, like, sell high as soon as you get the opportunity.
Yeah, and so I have pulled up some trades that have happened here. But as we know, these trades that we can see here in Yahoo, there is no context as to the trade. So we don't know the format league of the size, league. We don't know the settings, all of that sort of stuff. And yeah, if they're public leagues, who knows? You don't know who you're playing with in a public league. So,
yeah.
But there's a couple, like, just if I look at one-for-one trades, there's a couple of interesting ones. Joel Embiid for Ja Morant. I would take Ja Morant in a heartbeat there.
Yeah, I think they actually both have, you know, considerable injury history. So, you know, if you can offload Joel for Ja, I would take that just based on, you know, Ja seems to be playing more mindful in terms of his body and, you know, trying to remain as available as possible. So, yeah, it's an interesting player swap because the turnovers will probably be pretty comparable. Point scoring probably the same too, but you're obviously replacing rebounds for assists and some efficiency gains losing Embiid as well.
Embiid for Franz Wagner. That's an interesting one because Franz is obviously
hurt,
got injury concerns of his own. But no reason to think that this will be a long-term sort of ongoing thing. It's a one-off freak kind of injury. And once he's back, he'll just be good to go.
I think that's a good trade for both sides because I think if you're the Franz side, if you're gaining Franz, you're probably in a good position where you're like, hey, I can afford to not have a guy like Joel Embiid and I'll just have Franz sit for the next month and change and then have him ready to go for the back half of the season. If you get Joel Embiid, I mean, obviously I'd rather have Franz Wagner, but if you get Joel Embiid, at least you have a player that can provide you some stats now. Maybe you're trying to, you know, vie for a playoff spot or, you know, trying to climb up in the standings. If Embiid can stay healthy, like that actually could be a pretty good move for the next month or so.
Interesting one. This one, obviously the context, we'd have to know it. Joel Embiid for Giannis. I don't
know. No one's doing that. No.
Someone did it. But we have no idea.
A 16-team league where their team is just outstanding, listed with like a bunch of all-stars. Like, oh, sure, I can trade Giannis. Sure.
Yeah. So that one's a weird one. All right. Anyway, so the next player is Dennis Schroeder, who for a very different reason has been involved in a lot of fantasy trades. And obviously we know the real life trade that took place and sent him to Golden State. I guess, first of all, just firstly, what were your thoughts on the trade? Do you see this as the first in a step or in a series of moves for the Warriors to try and get more competitive in the West? Or for some reason, do they see Schroeder as the difference maker and the player that's going to take them to glory?
I think the timing of the deal is very important of this because they can now include Dennis Schroeder in another trade, which I think is just very calculated and great cap strategic management on their front office there for that. If he happens to stay in Golden State, I don't think it changes their outlook too much other than like from a fantasy perspective, you know, I think Schroeder's usage is going to go down a bit, but at the same time, he was playing with a Nets team that didn't really have, I would say, the competency and the chemistry that the Warriors have. So, like, if you're looking at potential assists, Noah brought it up on our Roto World podcast yesterday. If you look at the potential assists for Dennis Schroeder, it's actually up there with the likes of James Harden. James Harden just has more competent scorers alongside him, so he converts on those assists more. I would imagine that would be pretty good for Dennis Schroeder too, coming over to the Golden State Warriors. Like, I think he could see his assists probably stay pretty consistent to where it is right now. And I think he would still average anywhere between 16 and 18 points per game, because the way he gets his shots, like, he's a good off-ball three-point shooter. He can operate the pick and roll. He can drive to the basket. He's a good free throw shooter. I think he actually fits what they needed, because Buddy Hield's, you know, more or less, he's a catch and shoot three-point threat. When he's hot, he's hot. When he's not, you know, you're going to get those dud games and he's not going to see the floor. And I think he's also, Dennis Schroeder is also better defensively than Buddy Hield. But then also Brandon Pajemski is another guy that's going to be impacted by it. But it could also be a good thing for Brandon Pajemski, because he's been handling more of that point guard work, and that's not really his skill set. He's always been an off-ball slasher. When he has the opportunity in the space, he can knock down the three, but I think he's just been pressing a little bit, being forced into a role that may not have been in his best interest as a sophomore in the league thus far. So not that I'm saying I'm going to add Brandon Pajemski after this move happened. I would just say that, like, I think he'll be better than what he was before, because I think they have someone that can run that second unit. He can play off ball a little bit more, like he played with Chris Paul, where he had a more successful fantasy output. But in general, I think, you know, if you have Schroeder, I'd be okay if you traded him. But at the same time, I still think he's going to be a productive fantasy player.
And we'll find out tonight, because he's exactly playing tonight against the Grizzlies. So we'll get a good look. And they're relatively healthy at the moment as well. So this will be a pretty good reflection of what's going to happen, as long as he is on the team. As you said, he could be on the way out at some point. And so when we do look at trades that have gone down featuring Dennis Schroeder, they're pretty wild, like, because obviously people are going to have different opinions on what his immediate future looks like. So he's said he was traded for Dante DiVincenzo, and I would still much rather Dennis Schroeder based on what we've seen this season.
Oh man, that guy just got away with a robbery right there. Dante just hasn't been it, man. I should have put him on one of my, like, Cole, you know, holiday Cole lists, because, like, I had him as, like, a guy that could have won Sixth Man of the Year, but he is just not playing like it right now. Definitely a drop of the dude.
So that one, obviously, whoever has Schroeder there just thinks Schroeder's done. He's going to be in Golden State. He's not going to feature his stats. But then today, he was also traded for Dyson Daniels, 1-for-1. And so I would much rather Dyson. He was traded for Lowry Markkanen. He was traded for Devin Vassell. So there are some weird ones.
Devin Vassell actually seems more fair to me, because I think Vassell is still at that point where he's a buy low, because he's not starting yet. He's still not playing, you know, well over 30 minutes yet. I think that's probably the fairest one that you've mentioned yet, but I still wouldn't be, like, enamored by it.
No. And Dyson, no, thank you.
And no, the stocks drop off is just too significant for me to even consider that.
And then a couple more down the bottom: Jordan Poole, Malik Monk, Josh Hart.
I think Malik Monk is fair. You know, I think Malik Monk is definitely trending up. I don't know that I would sell high on Malik Monk, but I see the, I think that that's probably the fairest deal that's been offered.
And then Josh, as I said, Josh Hart is there, and that sort of is a seamless segue into talking about fantasy MVPs so far, because Josh Hart is right at the top of that list. So, and these are all tabs that you can access on the Yahoo platform. If I know a lot of people probably just look at their team and the players, and that's sort of it. They don't actually go digging around to see what's there, but you can actually go in and have a look at MVPs. And I'm just reading the description here. So it's players who appear most often on the top 500 public league teams. What would go into determining what is a top public league? Like, how is that decision made?
So when they say top, I think they're saying who is the top of the standings of those public leagues. So I think they're just taking a sample of 500, which name appears the most on the best teams, like the teams that are probably within the top three, I would say. It's probably top, though, if I had to guess. And so you look at the numbers, and, like, it's not a overwhelming amount of people, you know, in terms of, like, people over 25% of the top 500 teams that are listed there. But I thought it was pretty interesting that Nikola Vucevic is number one on that list at 27%. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about it, not us specifically, but the fantasy community has talked about Vucevic being a sell high for much of the season. But I think it just goes to show the people that drafted him where they did, the fact that he's getting first round value, he's been one of the most important and most valuable players in fantasy basketball. So I don't know. I think that, yeah, regression's going to hit at some point, but you can't argue with the fact that Vooch has been carrying fantasy teams all season long. And who knows what you could net in return for Vucevic at this point. And that's probably where that sell high opportunity lies. It's like, hey, can I get a second round, third round guy that's, you know, middling right now that is on the verge of breaking out again, or you're seeing some kind of data point that seems like they've turned it around. You could cash in on that because the proof is there. Vooch is winning people fantasy right now.
You could almost look at this list as just a list of the best sell high people. Like a lot of them are just playing above their heads. And as you said, Vooch is at the top. Josh Hart is there. OG Anunoby, Cat, Dyson Daniels. Interesting one is Brook Lopez, because he's sort of the one, if I look at that entire list,
he's the one that doesn't fit.
So whether that is just coincidence that he happens to be on a lot of good teams who also have Karl Anthony Towns, Dyson Daniels, and Cam Johnson, they might just have happened to have drafted Brook Lopez, because I wouldn't call him a difference maker this season.
No, but funny enough, I have one share of Brook Lopez in a 10-team league that has pretty deep, it's a keeper league, so it has pretty deep benches. I didn't want Brook Lopez, but he's on my squad and I'm second place in that league. So
There you go.
I also have Karl Anthony Towns, so that helped too.
Yeah, it is actually a good list to just have a look at it and see which players and is it sustainable and why.
Yeah.
Why are they on this list? Like with Vooch, I think it's pretty obvious. It's just his efficiency, because everything else is bang on what he's been doing for the last 10 years.
Right.
But he's just shooting the ball better than he ever has.
I mean, Tyler Hero on this list to me too. Like,
yeah,
that man's been playing outstanding. And I'm like, how long can he keep this up? Or is it like, how long till he gets hurt? I don't know. But like, I feel like Tyler Hero's been one of those sell high guys for me that I'm like, in the past, when he's played well, something has happened. So I'm like, oh, if Jimmy gets traded, oh my gosh, Tyler Hero is going to be even better. But
yeah,
I don't, you know, I think there's still some sell high there.
It's an interesting, I guess, mindset if you're rostering any of these players, because we're now a third of the way through the season. So the sample size is 25 to 30 games, which is decent.
And so doubt will
start to creep into your mind. Maybe this is sustainable. Maybe maybe Vooch can just shoot this well for the whole season. So it does. I don't know. There's then, as I said, that mindset of, is it harder to sell high personally on someone with a bigger sample size? Does your mind go to that space where it's okay, maybe this is sustainable, maybe this is who they are, or are we that much closer to them regressing and Vooch shooting 35% for 3 weeks and I've missed my opportunity? So it's, and that's what makes fantasy interesting, and that's what makes trades easy or hard depending on the mindset of managers in your league. So it's it's an interesting time, I think, in this week. Well, not a week, but this last 2 weeks where we've only had three games. People are bored, and so they're looking at their roster. Oh, maybe I can move this guy. I don't know whether we would see an increase in trades at this time of the year, just because people aren't as focused on day to day stuff. I'm not sure, but anyway, it has been a weird couple of weeks. I'm glad we're back to normal tonight.
Question for you: How many shares do you have of Victor Wembanyama?
One.
How are you doing in that league?
So I suck.
So looking in that, the one league that I have, Wembanyama, I also suck. And he's 31st on this MVP list. So okay. I'm wondering, I think Jokic is like 12 or 13 or something like that, which is still, that's still decent. So as valuable as Wembanyama is it like people don't build around him appropriately, or like, why would he be, being that he's a consensus one, two pick of the drafts, like how are teams being so unsuccessful with one of the best players in fantasy basketball on their roster?
Yeah, I think for me, so I just pulled up the roster that I have him on, because I look at my team in that league and I don't hate it. Like, I've got Jakob Poeltl in that team, and, and he's been very good this year. That's a good
value pick.
So I had Hartenstein. Obviously, I didn't have him for the first, whatever it was, month, 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. I have Ja Morant, who has missed time, games. I have Zion.
Who
has barely played. So there are reasons. I have players that have been very good. Şengün, I think, has been pretty good. RJ Barrett's been good. I think there's probably a bit, and this will adjust, I think, next year, but I do think people who drafted Wemby almost just disregarded blocks. They just thought Wemby is so elite in blocks that he's just going to win me the category by himself. And that's only going to happen if he's blocking five blocks a game.
Yeah.
But that hasn't happened every game. And and it's not going to, because teams are going to adjust and figure out how to play him and all sorts of things. So, yeah, it's because, as I said, I look at that team, I go, I like this team. There's not many players I want to drop, but I'm just not performing well. So I think it is probably a little bit of, he's so unique, we need to learn how to build around him, especially if you're punting.
Yeah, and I think that's the I was trying to think. So I actually have 3 shares of Wemby, and I'm first place, but one's a points league, so it's a bit different. You don't really have to factor in, you know, some of those inefficiencies and turnovers and so forth. Let me try to find the other one. I think the other one I'm in, like, yeah, I'm 32 and 31, so I'm in 8th place with that one. And then the other one, I'm like second to last. So
yeah,
and those are, I think you're right. Like, I think I was probably overfitting for, like, oh, I don't need blocks. And I look at some of these leagues and I'm like, damn, I'm like 2-6 in blocks this year. Like,
yeah,
if you got Wemby, you should be winning that, but you got to double down. And I think I definitely had some missteps there. So, I'm curious to see where Wemby goes next year. Like, he should still be, you know, a top 3-5 pick. But I wonder if people are going to be a little bit more strategic about how they build around him. Because I think this year it's clearly showing that the general public and us too didn't really do a great job of building around him.
Yeah, and if you look at his block, I mean, he's averaging 3.5 blocks for the year, which is probably about where we thought he'd be. But if you look at his block numbers over the last, I mean, I can quickly just in Fantrax here see the, because that's where I've got the roster. He's coming off a 7-block game, but before that he had 2-3-1-3-3-3-3-3-2-3. So that average there is closer to sort of 2.5, 2.6. But he then throws in those 7-8 block games every now and then, which bumps that average up.
Right.
He's not getting 4-5-5-4-3-4. It's more outliers where he's getting 7 or 8 opposed to that average. So, all right. So we've got a couple of trade questions in the comments here. We'll just do these, and then I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to go and eat before my pregame show. I did see one. Where is it? And I'll answer this question because Fat Cookie Monster said, yes, I was meant to be on Josh Lloyd's mailbag show. We had a blackout last night. That's part of the reason I slept in this morning. My wife and I both woke up at sort of 6:45 and went, why are the cats meowing to come out of their room and why aren't we awake? And it was because all of our alarm clocks were flashing and that sort of thing. And we're very old school, so we set our alarms on our alarm clocks, not on our phones.
You have an alarm clock. Impressive. We do. That's what's up.
We do. because we turn our phones off at night. That's when
that seems peaceful.
It is. Yeah. I don't know. In our mind, it is anyway. So our phones go off and then we turn them on when we get up. So that is why I was not on Josh's show. And I have apologized to Josh already. okay, here we go. So traded Randall for Quickly in a nine cap soft punt turnovers. Did I win or lose the trade? Again, it's hard to know with settings, all that sort of stuff. But I guess Quickly for Randall, do you think that's a fair trade? I think that's a fair trade.
Yeah, I think it's a fair trade. I think the values and obviously the beholder. But, you know, you're taking a risk by grabbing Quickly now. Like, obviously, this is probably the lowest you're going to be getting them in terms of like a buy low opportunity. But I still do have questions. Like, I don't know what's up with his elbow. Like, he's still not taking contact. He's not ready. He still seems like he's a ways away. So I don't know. I would, depending on what your roster looks like, you're obviously, you know, have a surplus of bigs if you can just throw away Randall for a guard like that, who's hurt. But it could pay off well for you if you were light in assists and points, if Quickly can come back in the next, like, you know, few weeks or so. I'm not confident though.
No, I hope he can, because we were all very excited to see him playing as the lead guard for the first time in his career for a full season.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen it to this point. So it's a bit frustrating. Let's do a Horford question. Is Horford someone who should be rostered in 16 team leagues? I think he is.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he does enough. All right, trying to acquire Anthony Davis. Would you trade Zubac and Tyler Hero for Anthony Davis? I would, personally.
I would too.
Yeah,
The net gain out of that one is I think it's a perfect time to sell high. That's how you sell high on Tyler Hero right there. Go get yourself a top five player in the league, in fantasy and in all formats.
What's this one? Thoughts on Jalen Duren picking up? Speaking of disappointing players, dropped him in a nine cat league, but he's still sitting there. Yeah, I mean, have you got hopes for Jalen Duren this year? Do you think that he can get back to where we thought? Well, where I thought he was potentially top 50-ish, and he hasn't even been close. Do you think he can get there?
I do think he can get there. I don't know if he's going to get quite to top 50, but I think we should be able to settle in around top 75. I mean, he's another guy that I was, you know, super high on in the earlier season, and then he ended up in a timeshare with Isaiah Stewart. I guess the benefit is Isaiah Stewart's hurt right now, so maybe we could see Duren play more like the player we all expected to. He had, 16 rebounds last game? I just don't know that JB Bickerstaff loves him. I don't know. Like, I feel like he just appreciates the defensive side of things more, and that's what Isaiah Stewart brings. I think that there might be a window where Jalen Duren puts up some really good numbers if Stewart misses time. But I don't know that I – 10-team, I don't think that you need to roster him at the same time either. So if he's out there, grab him, ride the wave for a minute. If Stewart misses any time, he plays better, sell him. And then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
I think tonight is if Duren is sort of, if we're thinking, okay, he needs a good opportunity, tonight is a good night. They play the Jazz, who are a big team.
Great night.
Isaiah Stewart is out for I don't know, a week, whatever. So Paul Reed, who they waived and then signed and weird, Paul Reed is their backup. So if there's any night for Duren to go, okay, this I need to sort of take a stand here and prove myself, tonight would be the night. So let's see how he goes against the Jazz. This one's been in there twice. It's a loaded question. Points league, 17 points league. Gee, the waivers must be good in a 17 league.
17.
Zion, LaVine, John Collins, PJ Washington, and Suggs for Jaylen Brown and Devin Booker.
I'm fine with that. If you got Jaylen Brown and Booker, cool.
It
sounds like you had a bunch of fillers in there. Like, I mean, John Collins was playing very well. So is Suggs. But like Zion, like your guess is as good as mine of when that guy's going to play basketball again. LaVine could be traded. And so, like, if you're getting rid of him a little bit earlier, you know, getting ahead of the curve there, that makes sense. And we were talking about before the show, you said Jaylen Brown's actually been surprisingly in some trades on Yahoo, which is kind of surprising because, like, he's not a guy that I feel like people would want to actively trade for or also get off of your team. But
yeah,
I think this is a win for the Jaylen Brown, Devin Booker side.
Yep. He says he got Book and Jaylen and then added, so Giddy was on waivers. So that shows you the depth of the league if Josh Giddy's sitting on waivers because he'd been playing really well before the injury. All right, I'm going to let you get out of here because I have to go and, well, I have to record another show. But what's going on with yourself, with Yahoo over the next few weeks? Obviously, the Christmas break might impact a couple of things. The Roto World show that you do with Raf and Noah is usually recorded on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm,
so I'm assuming you won't be recording on Christmas Day.
Nope. You can find the Christmas episode on Monday. We're recording a couple of days early to accommodate for the holiday. Other stuff that's going on, if you haven't already, if your fantasy football team sucked, go draft a fantasy basketball team on Yahoo. It's a lot of fun. You can play in a free league or a cash league. So do that. It's a lot of fun, as I said. And just tap into all the stuff I'm doing on Yahoo, the playlist on Mondays where I can get all my, you can get all my waiver ads and schedule info that I drop, and doing some fun things in terms of what am I doing? I'm going to have some New Year's resolutions, all that kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It'll come to me. But yeah, just tap into my stuff on yahoo.com. Find me on Twitter and Blue Sky.
All right, and thank you for jumping on the show. I know you're very busy, and you're
miss you, man. It's been a while, so happy to talk.
It has been a while, so no, it was good. Good to talk. That will do, I think. Yeah, well, I'm going to get out of here. You're going to get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. We had a lot of people watching. I always love to see that. I'm Adam King. He's Dan Titus. This has been the Balls Deep podcast. There's no theme to this one, just the Balls Deep podcast. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.